Hey there, Rick Singeri of Vermont Edition. Just want you to know this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're looking at the latest plan for how to fund lake and waterways cleanup in the state. The cleanup is going to have to happen. It's mandated by the federal government. And most people agree that it's needed and that doing it sooner will save us from paying even more later. We've already been paying more than $30 million a year for the past few years to fund water quality, but the state treasurer identified $25 million or so that are needed year over year for the next 20 years that she said could come from the state government. But where exactly that money should come from, well, that's been up for debate, which brings us to today. There's a new report out suggesting a funding mechanism. This one comes from the state's Working Group on Water Quality Funding. It's weighted heavily in terms of its membership with Scott administration members and town and business entities. The advisory council includes other members of the government, municipal, and agricultural sectors. We'll get into the details in a little while, but the headline is that this group is suggesting we take money from the capital bill, where funding for infrastructure developments like road and bridge repair come from. Let's just dive right into it with our guests. Julie Moore is Secretary of the Agency of Natural Resources. Secretary Moore, nice to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
John Groveman is Policy and Water Program Director for the Vermont Natural Resources Council. John, it's nice to have you with us as well.
Great to be here, Jane.
Secretary Moore, I gave the headline. Basically, it's been well established that the state will have to come up with about $1 billion at minimum over the next 20 years to fund waterways cleanup. And there's not really any way around that. We are mandated to do this by the federal government, at least for while the EPA exists. Not only that, but most of the groups around the state, business, environmental, agricultural, governmental, individual, everybody agrees that our waterways are an essential resource to maintain. So the question is how to fund that cleanup through a split between government money and the end users of our landscape having to pay individually for their share. What's the basic approach you're taking in this report?
Sure. The basic approach we're taking in this report is to start by honing in on just how much money is needed in the near term. You mentioned the Treasurer's report in your introduction, and that sort of compiled what we see as all of the investments that are likely to be required over the next 20 years to achieve our clean water goals here for the entire state. She then took that number and divided by 20 to come up with an average annual cost estimate. We know that the costs of clean water don't actually occur in even annual increments. They're driven by our permitting programs and by other planned improvements, particularly at our wastewater facilities. And so the Working Group on Water Quality Funding started by developing some more specific estimates of just what the costs are anticipated to be in each of the next 5 years. And then, as you alluded to, looking at current cost share as prescribed in largely in statute, and how that then translates into whether those costs are anticipated to be borne by state government, local government, the federal government, or the private sector.
Right. And so I'm looking at the pie chart that's in the report, the draft report. And again, this is a draft report. It's actually open for comment. So that's part of why we're doing this right now. So listeners, if you're interested, if you feel like you have a specific stake in this, you can read the report. You can also comment. We're having this conversation here with Julie Moore and John Groveman. We'd love your input. Our number is 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post notes on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. But you have a great little pie chart here, Secretary Moore, and it looks like recommended annual clean water funding for fiscal years 2020 through 2024. The federal government is expected to kick in $16 million a year. Municipal money will have to be $25 million a year. Private money, $11 million a year. And then the part of the state money is one that's been up for debate a lot, and that's what part of what the treasurer's recommendations included and part of what your recommendations include. And you're recommending that the state contribution of $22 million a year come from the capital bill. Why the capital bill?
Correct. Well, just to be clear, the sort of the additional increment beyond existing contributions of state resources is $22 million. The total state commitment to clean water at this point is on the order of $56 million a year.
Right.
We're proposing to link it to the capital bill, frankly, for several reasons. One is some of the upfront investments and projects that we're looking at, including work at our wastewater treatment facilities, stormwater infrastructure, whether it's runoff from developed lands or along municipal and state highways, are all capital eligible projects, as well as some of the natural resources restoration work we're engaged in, including the purchase of permanent easements for particularly valuable resources, such as riparian lands right along our stream banks and rivers or wetland areas. Another reason to propose that is because the capital bill is a broad-based approach to funding this work. We all pay into the capital bill through our taxes, and so it does represent that all-in approach, which we continue to believe is really important. Water quality is an asset for all of us here in Vermont, and it's important that all Vermonters play an active role in achieving our clean water goals.
John Groveman, what do you think about that? I mean, particularly the capital bill is the, as I said, it's the headline here, because that's part of the area that's been up for debate, is where are those additional state funds going to come from?
So we have concerns about relying on the capital bill going forward for funding. And just to take a step back, though, I mean, I think one of the things, and as you said, Jane, the report is draft. And is up for comment. I think comments are due next Wednesday. So, you know, VNRC, Vermont Natural Resources Council, we're going to be commenting. We're working with a number of other environmental groups. And our first kind of view on this is that, you know, we were hoping that the working group working off the Treasurer's report would really propose a plan of action for when right now we're in a 2-year period of funding that ends, I think, a year from July, I could be wrong about that, but I think that's right. And then when that funding ends, we were hoping that this working group would come up with a recommendation for what comes next. And the Treasurer's report basically said that we needed 2 years of bridge funding to get us to a long-term, stable, dedicated funding source. And we really were looking for in the report is, okay, how do we get there? We've had a lot of debate and discussion about, you know, where the money should come from, how the money should be distributed. You know, we think we're ready to as a state, to take action and identify that dedicated source that's not just capital money. So we are concerned that in this report that there are numbers that say that going up to FY 2024, we could be relying on, significant amount of money from the capital fund. And we just don't think that's sustainable. There's a lot of competition for capital money. There's no guarantee that every year or every cycle, we'd all have to go in and argue for those funds. It's not a dedicated, long-term, stable resource. There are limitations on the use of capital money. And we really, Act 64, when it was passed, the Vermont Clean Water Act in 2015, you know, the vision was, hopefully, we actually talked about trying to get that long-term dedicated funding established in 2015. That didn't happen. We have had a little bit of funding from the property transfer tax that went into place right away, and then this 2 years of bridge funding. So we really want to move. We think it's appropriate to rely somewhat on the capital fund, but not to the tune of $22 million.
Let me stop you there, because we're going to get into more of this. But on that question of long-term stable funding, Secretary Moore, right in the act establishing this working group, the legislature asked you to come up with, quote, an equitable and effective long-term funding method to support clean water efforts in Vermont. As John was mentioning, in this draft report, you've put funding sources as you see them through fiscal year 2024. That's, you know, 5 years out. Is that just kicking the can down the road another 5 years? I mean, it doesn't come up with a long-term stable funding source, does it?
Sure. So I think 2 points. One is to be perfectly clear that we don't see the capital bill as the long-term funding solution for water quality. I think the reason we landed there as in the proposal that's contained in the draft report is frankly a response to information and input we received from the working group regarding mechanisms that might be considered to raise funds in the long-term manner we're looking for. Specifically, we received reports from both the League of Cities and Towns and the Department of Taxes about how they would go about administering a per parcel or an impervious surface fee, knowing that that those approaches are ones that the legislature has shown great interest in over the course of time, and the treasurer had put at sort of the top of her list of options as well. And what we found was when they came back with these proposals, the administrative costs for putting either of those systems in place were disproportionate to the revenue raise. They looked like 20 to 25% administrative costs, assuming we were looking to raise on the order of the $25 million you referenced previously. We also received a report from the Vermont Center for Geographic Information looking at the availability of data to support the implementation of any sort of per parcel or impervious surface fee, and know that the availability of that data statewide is still a couple of years out. So the report does include a recommendation to continue to work on this, to look at those long-term sustainable funding mechanisms, specifically to hire a consultant to start to pull apart how we could get to a place where we're raising revenue in a way and the administrative costs of raising that revenue are reasonable.
So what we had previously was about a two-year bridge to get to a more permanent solution. Is what you have given us in this report essentially a five-year bridge, an additional five-year bridge?
If that's needed. It was also an attempt to provide what I would call a proof of concept, that there are sufficient resources within the capital bill to meet the needs in the near term, to give us the time to continue to do the hard work that's needed to get to that long-term funding solution.
John Groveman, I know that many advocates were hoping for in what has been termed a sophisticated approach to a per parcel fee, and Secretary Moore has said her group is not opposed to that, but it's difficult and we're not there yet. So why isn't the capital bill a good solution if we really can't get to that per parcel fee that you're looking for right now because administrative costs are 20% of the revenue?
So, I think the debate at this point, and I've talked with Secretary Moore about this, is largely about how fast that we could go. As I said, we've been talking about this for a long time, almost going back to 2015, where we did talk about a per parcel fee. I think we're having, potentially a differences of opinion about where we are, in moving forward with a per parcel fee. What we would like to see, we don't disagree that there are obviously details that need to be worked out. But from what I hear from not only environmental groups, but business groups that we're working with and municipal groups, planning groups, is that there is a lot of support for a per parcel fee and that we could do the work in the legislature this year to get something in place, a structure in place and the wheels in motion. Ideally, we've talked about this enough. We know what the issues are. And I agree with Secretary Moore that there was, input provided to the working group about do the clerks and treasurers, administer the program or the tax department? Do we have a separate clean water authority, which is a dear idea that's emerged out there? We think that there's enough information about we need to choose one of these ways to go. And, we're going to push as advocates in the legislature to get moving on in one of these directions. And so when the 2 years of bridge funding is completed, we at least have a path. We're not, we don't have to wait 5 years. And we just don't think that it will take that long, and we just need to make some decisions that may be difficult, but that's the point where we're at.
Let's back up for just a moment, because it's been a long time since we've discussed these proposals and since we've actually talked about what a per parcel fee would mean. And for people who are like, wait a minute, just what the heck is a per parcel fee? What we're talking about here would be a fee, and it's not called a tax, but a fee on the landscape and the owners of parcels of land, and the various ways that could be allocated or administered are still up for debate, and clearly are still up for much debate. But something like a fee on the impervious surfaces on that parcel or some other way. John, how do you see it? Explain it better than I have.
Well, it really is. It's not that complicated, although it may be controversial or maybe not. We'll see. But you could start with just a simple per parcel fee based on how many lots there are, and you come up with a assessment, and you could raise X amount of money depending on how many parcels are out there and what the assessment is. That is not a very detailed and sophisticated way of doing it, but it is certainly a way to do it, and it was discussed in 2015. From our view, if we still don't have the data to get more drilled in, the more sophisticated way to do it is to look at the amount of impervious surface or developed area on a parcel and base the fee on that. And the obviously, the more impervious surface you have, the more contribution to water pollution you have. So that is another way to go about it. But in our view, it's not all or nothing. We could implement it first in sort of the simpler way, and then as we gain more experience and gather more data and information, we can move to a more sophisticated approach. So that is generally how I would describe it.
Yeah, and the idea here being that you tie the funding mechanism to the actual source of pollution. So that we, you know, if we know phosphorus is running off the landscape, we tie the funding mechanism to the place, sort of the source of that pollution in a sense.
Yeah, there's been broad agreement that we want whatever the long-term stable funding mechanism, there should be a nexus to the pollution, and there should be a link between the fee that's being assessed and the loading that is occurring.
Secretary Moore, one of the concerns or questions that people have about using the capital bill to fund that $22 million a year is that there are other infrastructure projects that also call on capital bill funding. And so, you know, if we guarantee or carve out $22 million a year in extra funding for water waste cleanup, are we essentially shortchanging other infrastructure projects that are needed, including projects in the mental health sector and other areas that there are real projects that are going to need that funding?
Right. Obviously, the capital bill is a fairly limited pie, and this would be a moderately sized piece of that pie. That said, I know that the Agency of Administration has been actively involved in these conversations and looking carefully at the other demands and anticipated demands on the capital bill. And believe that this is an approach that we can support. Again, this isn't the long-term solution, and I think that's important for folks to keep in mind. If we were saying we were going to do this for the next 20 years, I imagine that the Agency of Administration would have had a much different answer for me than in talking about it in a short and near-term as the short and near-term solution.
So, waterways cleanup. We have to pay for it. Where should the money come from? And why does it matter whether we get it from the capital bill or a per parcel fee or some other funding source? We're discussing the latest plan from the working group that was designed to come up with one, and we're trying to get a grip on why the funding mechanism matters. John Groveman, why does it matter? Essentially, you know, this whole pie that I was talking about earlier of private funding, federal funding, municipal funding, the capital bill or a per parcel fee or however we decide to do that, it's all our money, right? I mean, we're all paying into all of those sources. So why does it matter exactly what the breakdown is?
Well, it matters that we have enough money to do the job. And, you know, as we all know, and there's no dispute, and I think all Vermonters are concerned, and I know that the Secretary and ANR are working hard on the significant water quality problems. Some of them are obvious, like we've seen in Lake Carmi and in Lake Champlain with algae blooms. Some are less visible and less clear, but they're less real. And that is really what drove the Vermont Clean Water Act and the analysis of what is the funding that we have if we're going to have clean water and meet water quality standards, and what's that gap. And so basically we're talking about a gap. I mean, Secretary Moore is correct. We spend a lot of money on water quality in Vermont, but there has been a gap that's been identified, and we're trying to fill that gap. And so the question becomes, well, what's the best way to do that? And, you know, given the issues that we've seen, I think, like I said, I think a lot of the debate is around the pace of this, is that, you know, the problems are real and they're significant. And, you know, I think we're looking to pick up the pace, you know, and to kind of get this long-term, get the funding this debate out of the way so we can move on and really talk about the next show you do could be about, well, what are the programs that are working to keep our waters clean, and what are the improvements to stormwater regulations and farm regulations, you know, and other water quality programs that we have. But the money is a big part of it, and that was recognized right in Act 64. I mean, this is not coming from nowhere. It's coming from the Vermont Clean Water Act that was passed, and we had the debate in 2015, and we're still having the debate now. So this is a continuation. So it matters because we need to close that gap.
Let's go to the calls. John is calling in from Jeffersonville. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
Yeah, you know, year after year, this is on your show or on other shows, and there's studies and administrative, a lot of costs involved with that, and nothing ever seems to really get implemented or done, and it gets kind of annoying. You know, if you want to tax somebody or get the money from somebody, tax the people who cause the pollution, which unfortunately is the farmers. You can only dump so much manure in the lake and expect it to be clean in the industrial areas that are on the lake or on the waterways.
So, John, you say, just come on, come up with the money already, tax us?
Not tax whoever pollutes, you know, puts the pollution in the lake. I mean, it's, you know, do something. There's so many studies, and they mull over this over and over again. And I never see anything really implemented to actually clean the lake up. It's talk about getting money, and I don't know. It seems like nothing ever happens.
John, thanks for your point. Julie and Ron, before we come back to you for a response, let's get another one in here from Ron in Concord. Hi, Ron. Go right ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
So I partially agree with the previous caller. I have to tell you, we're taxed to death, honest to God. Our property taxes are through the roof. Our municipality gets very little of the total tax levy that they collect. Heck, I've got a road sign that tells all of the electrical tape right now because the town has no money. And I own a modest home on a very small body of water in Vermont. And it almost feels like it's a penalty or a sin tax to have property on water that's, quite frankly, is pretty clean. So to John's point, if the lion's share of the issue is on Champlain, tax the polluters. I just don't. There are so many people in arrears in their taxes and their property taxes right now. It's a pretty terrible thing to see. To just pile onto that is a non-starter. So that's my opinion.
Ron, thanks for your opinion. So Ron and John both saying, look, tax the people who are creating the problem. Secretary Moore, what do you say to them?
I think it's important to keep in mind that we are all part of the problem. Certainly different sectors contribute different amounts of pollution, but in reality, agriculture is an important source, as is the developed landscape. And whether it's our homes, our driveways, the roads we drive on to get to and from our jobs or to or from the grocery store, the parking lots we park in, all of those sources are important. And so we all do have some responsibility to see that they are addressed and remediated. And to John's point, I want to be clear that the agency is literally overseeing the implementation of hundreds of projects this year alone. One example that we're particularly proud of is we provided a grant and aid program targeted to municipalities, asking them to identify opportunities to implement water quality practices as part of road construction projects or reconstruction projects they had planned during this past construction season. And 75% of towns throughout Vermont signed up for the grant and aid program and implemented one or more water quality best practices on their roads. And so we think this is just an incredible example of people who are interested and engaged, looking to do the right thing. And we hope to continue this in years to come.
Yeah, John Groveman, I mean, what we're talking about here with the capital bill, this $22 million per year in extra funding through 2024, fiscal year 2024, is not the extent of the money that it takes to clean up and maintain our waterways. And it's so there are many sources, and this all-in approach that Secretary Moore has been talking about includes polluters having to kick in more money to essentially, quote, pay their fair share, right?
Absolutely. Like I said, this is just a gap in the money. We spend a lot of money. I think there's broad agreement, and VNRC agrees with ANR that, you know, individual polluters, we're not looking to subsidize individual pollution problems. We're looking to fill the gap in water quality improvements that's not covered through either people complying with permits and cleaning up their own discharges and pollution and the other funding that exists. I do want to make the point, though, that's really – I do agree in what Secretary Moore said about being all in. That's been the approach ever since the Vermont Clean Water Act passed, and I couldn't agree more with what she said. In terms of, you know, the value of these payments, I think it's important to remember, and I saw a 2015 UVM report, there's $2.6 billion in tourist money that comes into the state of Vermont. The governor on one of his big initiatives is recreation, tourism, and bringing people to the state. People aren't going to want to come to our state if we have the type of water quality problems that we're seeing. You know, we're a green, beautiful state. We have that reputation. We want to keep that reputation. We want to bring in tourists, tourism money. Property values are, you know, a huge issue if you get severe water quality problems, as we've seen in parts of the state. So it's not so simple just to say you're spending money and then therefore you're not getting – it's an investment, you know, and we need to invest to address these issues so we could be a vibrant state and have good property values and tourism. I think it's important to realize this is not – just money that's going nowhere. It's money that is vitally important for our environment, but also, you know, for our economy.
Scott in Promfret says, what's the current administration doing to pursue the idea of leveraging funding under the Clean Water State Revolving Fund? For example, creating incentives to expand the use of these funds or pairing projects by using the interest from revolving fund loans. Doing so would substantially broaden the reach of federal dollars and put that money to work more rapidly. Secretary Moore?
Yeah, actually, that's what parallels one of the recommendations contained in the working group report, looking for opportunities to expand eligibility for the Clean Water State Revolving Fund. And for those who may not be familiar with what that is as a funding source, that is a funding program that's jointly capitalized by EPA and the state of Vermont. By and large, historically, loans through that state revolving fund have gone to municipal wastewater treatment facilities that were looking to either refurbish their plant or implement upgrades. The loans that come out of that fund tend to be low interest, no interest, or sometimes even negative interest, meaning a part of the funding is provided to the municipality as a grant. Within the past couple of years, EPA has changed their policy and made available those SRF dollars for other types of projects beyond municipal wastewater treatment facilities. And one of the recommendations of the group is to seize upon those flexibilities that have been provided at the federal level and see what they can be used for here on the ground in Vermont.
Let's go to David calling in from Duxbury. Hi, David. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
My comment is that I really don't believe that you can have a per lot fee simply because undeveloped land does not cause the problems. It's impervious soils. And there are many towns that have riparian boundary requirements in their zoning where the landowners next to a stream or wetland or waterland cannot use their land for development to protect the wetlands. So it wouldn't be right to A, have them pay property taxes on land that they can't develop, and then add an additional per lot fee to protect the water, which they're already protecting.
Yeah, David, thanks for your call. And John Groveman, just to recap here again, the questions about how to administer or how to actually determine what a per parcel fee would be might include things like the fee is on the impervious surfaces, not on the acreage, right?
Absolutely. One of the ideas that I like that has emerged is creating a water authority to basically determine the budget on water quality with some minimum floors and how it will be administered with guidance from the legislature, taking into account all kind of factors, including the factors that the caller mentioned. So all those things have been part of the debate. They will be continue to be part of the debate. But I think there are good ideas out there of how to build fairness into this that we could go forward and we could implement a fee program that was fair and, you know, raise the money that we need.
We got a note from Bill who says, unless I'm mistaken, capital bill funds are borrowed funds. Should we be using borrowed funds for addressing surface water runoff problems? Secretary Moore, I mean, aren't we essentially using, the capital bill uses bonding, so these are essentially loans that we're using to do this.
It is, and I would argue it is an appropriate use of capital funds. That clean water, as John has even alluded to in his comments, is an incredible asset to the state of Vermont. And just like other assets of the state, such as state-owned buildings and bridges and highways, it requires ongoing commitment and investment for proper stewardship. And that is exactly the investment we're proposing to make in Vermont's water resources.
When we bond, though, for an infrastructure project or on the municipal level when we need a new fire engine, those are often one-time large expenses as opposed to something that is year over year and anticipated and expected and, you know, annual expense. So isn't there a difference?
I don't think so. I mean, these are, when it comes down to it, individual projects, albeit tens of thousands of individual projects. We're talking about things including improvements to municipal roads, improving the quality of ditches through rock lining, the installation of check dams, looking at energy dissipation structures associated with cross culverts, a whole myriad of issues. We're also making investments by purchasing permanent easements on particularly sensitive lands to make sure that they're held in a natural condition in perpetuity to address one of the questions raised by the previous landowner. So where we know those particularly valuable and sensitive natural resource areas are, we look to purchase the rights to avoid future management of them. So, you know, while the scale, when we're saying tens of thousands of projects is true, it's going to require a year-in, year-out investment until we see that work list complete. The individual projects themselves are very much the kinds of things we routinely pay for with capital dollars here in Vermont.
Let's go to James calling in from Middlebury. Hi, James. You're on the air.
The caller, two callers actually, who called in to complain about the fact that the state keeps taxing them and they don't see any progress. Vermont has about a 50-year history of ignoring the contribution that conventional dairy makes, which is about 50% of the problem. Act 64 contains no mechanism for regulating the contribution from conventional dairy other than sending around.
Oh, we lost James, but I think this is the same James who actually emailed in to us to say, largest contributor to lake pollution is conventional dairy. Act 64 was not written to clean up dairy's contribution. Dairy production has increased by over 50% in the past 40 years, and production has a direct correlation to lake pollution, also steadily rising. But the law has no mechanism for curtailing dairy production, and in fact, the law imposed no material constraints on the industry, leaving farmers free to conduct business as usual going forward. John Groveman, is that something you agree with?
I know that's James Maroney, and he works on these issues, and I've worked with James. And I agree that that the historic way we farm, I think we all agree, is contributing significantly to the phosphorus loading problem. And I think there's some really innovative solutions out there that James has been involved talking about in terms of trying to have better soil management and how could we use some of this money, in fact, to get farmers to implement different, better practices that will, in the long term, you know, reduce some of the problems. So, I mean, I do agree, you know, generally with what James, the problem statement. I think we're working right now on what's the way to solve the problem. I think some of this funding could, you know, be part of that solution.
I think it's also important to note that the required agricultural practices that were included as part of Act 64 do make some significant changes in requirements for the agricultural community, particularly when it comes to small farms that have historically been largely unregulated. Those changes are sort of actively afoot. The ag agency is out with a plan to inspect each one of those farms and get folks enrolled in programs that can help fund the implementation of necessary conservation measures.
You know, the study group and the advisory council to the study group to come up with this plan included a lot of Scott administration appointees. The advisory group included some elected officials, but there were representatives from the municipalities, from business, from agriculture. The agriculture secretary was on the working group. UVM Extension, Ag Extension was on the advisory council. Secretary Moore, why wasn't anybody from the environmental advocacy groups included in either of those two groups working on this?
Well, there was some a representative of the environmental advocacy community as part of the advisory council that was appointed by the Speaker of the House, and that was Jared Carpenter from the Lake Champlain Committee. Mm. The construct of the membership was taken on by the legislature, and so beyond that, I can't really speak to it. I think they were looking to capture a diversity of interests, including those identifying those different sectors that would be most likely to be impacted both by the implementation of a fee, but also the ongoing work to successfully implement Act 64.
So this draft report is out. We're in the comments period. So for people who feel strongly and want to contribute, want to have a voice, Secretary Moore, what do they do?
The draft report is available on our website. If folks were to Google ANR Vermont Act 73, they would be directed right to the website with a link to the report. We are accepting comments, as John indicated earlier, until November 1st. And the reason for that relatively short public comment period is because we are statutorily required to deliver our report to the legislature on or before November 15th.
If you don't feel like Googling, we have a link directly on the show page today. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. Julie Moore is Secretary of the Agency of Natural Resources. Thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
John Groveman is Policy and Water Program Director for the Vermont Natural Resources Council. John, thanks very much to you.
Thank you, Jane.